My son is very into Power Rangers right now. Now, depending on your age or your children or your grandchildren's age, you may know about the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, as the TV show has been around in one version or another for about 30 years. If you don't know about it, here's the concept. Each episode, bad guys come from outer space or somewhere far away and threaten the Earth. There is usually some kind of magical power source involved. The good guys, the Power Rangers, get together, and through their martial arts, their intelligence, their teamwork, and their ability to transform and use superpowers, they're able to fight off the bad guys. Good wins every time. Tune back in next week for more exciting adventures. On the one hand, this can be a pretty fun show, exciting, action-packed, very low-budget special effects and costumes, and campy, cheesy fun. But on the other hand, those of us who feel like we've matured beyond the Power Rangers probably see the world in a more nuanced way. The lines between good and bad are not usually so clear. The bad guy in a spaceship who wants to steal all of Earth's water so they can transform into an even more powerful bad guy is not usually what we encounter in real life. But there are some exceptions. There are times when it seems very clear that something is evil, and that it is the responsibility of the good people to do something about it. Sometimes, even in our complicated world of nuance and perspectives, a clear good is in danger from a clear evil. That does happen today. You're probably thinking of examples right now. You may even be thinking about the things that you personally have done to fight, to protest, to make your voice heard. There are some great quotes from influential leaders about the importance of being involved, standing up, and not remaining silent. Whether you are too old for Power Rangers or not, I hope that you believe that when enough people work together to fight for the cause of right, they can defeat the power of evil. This is not just a fairy tale ending, but something that we all want to strive for, a belief that good will prevail over evil, that teamwork makes the dream work, that so long as we don't stay silent, we collectively can expose and defeat the systems and powers that perpetuate injustice and oppression in our world. We have been trained to believe and long for happy endings, even when we realize that sometimes those happy endings take years or even decades of struggle and perseverance. So, what happened with Jesus? Looking at this story of Good Friday through the eyes of a child who still has a favorite Power Ranger and still believes that before the show is over, evil will be vanquished, how do we explain Jesus' crucifixion? Where was Jesus' backup? Where were the disciples? Where were the swords and bows and arrows and the karate chops? The hope was there, even until the last minute, that something, someone, would come to the rescue. Jesus was supposed to be the one who did the rescuing. We saw that plenty of times through the scriptures. But when Jesus needed help, where did it come from? The disciples ran away, afraid. Even God stayed away. In a different gospel's account of his crucifixion, Jesus cries out to God with the words of Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Jesus is left alone to die. No one is there to rescue him. Good loses. Evil wins. Jesus knows what he's doing. That doesn't excuse the betrayal of Judas or the denial of Peter. That doesn't make it okay that the disciples ran off and deserted him when Jesus needed them most. That doesn't make it okay that people were willing to stand up and defame Jesus so that he might be executed. But none of it is outside of what Jesus anticipated. Jesus knew the way of the world. Having been born in Roman occupation, Jesus knew the power structures that governed his existence. Jesus knew the system. He knew whose name and picture was on the Roman coin. And he knew that those who had power on earth had that power granted to them by someone else. Jesus knew that in this world, power determined what happened, who was in charge, who paid what to whom, and also who lived and who died. In his world, Jesus did not have power, except the power of influence and charisma over a ragtag group of disciples and the mostly poor people who followed him around. This was not the kind of power that the Romans had. But Jesus' kingdom was not of this world, as he told Pilate. If it was, his followers would be fighting to keep him from being handed over. If Jesus' kingdom was of this world, then Jesus' followers would win. They would defeat the powers of those who would capture him. With their mix of intelligence, cool gadgets, teamwork, and superpowers, Jesus' team would win before the last commercial break. They would vanquish any foe. But Jesus' kingdom is not of this world. And that's not how Jesus' kingdom works. The world that we live in, all of us, despite Jesus' message, still operates in the same way. Things have not changed much since Jesus walked the earth. Still today, the most powerful make the rules. The people with the most influence dictate how things will unfold, and the biggest bullies get to decide how the rest of the world will operate, while others cower in fear. There is still a role for protest. There is a place for dissent. Petitions and policy changes can still make a difference. Standing up to bullies, even when those bullies control entire nations, is a powerful and important part of maintaining order in our world. But for Jesus and the kingdom he sought to demonstrate for us, might does not make right. The Pax Romana of Jesus' time that was so widely celebrated came as a result of all of Rome's adversaries being defeated. But it was not true peace. Those who disagreed just weren't strong enough to stand up against the power of empire. The dissidents were silenced. But what about Jesus? Why did Jesus let himself be defeated? Why did Jesus carry that cross to his own execution? Why didn't Jesus summon armies and angels and warriors to fight against the Romans and his opponents and his oppressors? Because Jesus wanted to show us a better way. The way of love, the way of self-sacrifice, the way of obedience. Jesus told his disciples that all who take the sword die by the sword. Jesus chose to die by the sword so that we might all come to understand that there is a better way than the way of the sword. Jesus didn't allow himself to suffer and die so that he might be in solidarity with those others who had been crushed by the empire. but to demonstrate something more. That though he could have summoned more than 12 legions of angels to defeat all of Rome's soldiers and silence all of Jesus' opponents, that wasn't his path. Jesus' path revealed to us something more powerful than force, than brutality, than pain and suffering and violence. Jesus suffered to show us that love is the better way, that God's love for us is greater than any weapon anyone could ever imagine. The way Jesus' world functioned, the way our world still functions, is not the only way. As we sang in the children's Good Friday service earlier today, love is stronger than pain. Love is stronger than hate. Love is stronger than fear. Love is even stronger than death. Love is stronger than everything.